Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
All right. Hello. Hello and welcome to the princes that were promised. We are the Watchers on the Couch, and we did our Game of Thrones rewatch for season one. John has done his Game of Thrones rewatch all the way through.
The biggest thing that I take away from the six seasons of Game of Thrones, also being an avid book reader, House Tully is the worst. Rewatch these episodes and you'll just cringe.
It started as a dislike for Catelyn Tully, but it's grown now to anybody.
Anyone in a part of House Tully except for the Blackfish. And mind you again, House Tully also includes Robb Tully, a.k.a. Robb Stark, and Sansa Tully. They're also part of House Tully.
So not the biggest Robb Stark fan anymore.
Ah, the hell with Robb. He's the Stark, the Stark that lost the North.
He's the king that lost the North.
One thing that Lord Lover said to Jon and Sansa was, we backed your son. We backed Eddard's son.
Right.
And
we did our duty.
And yeah. And he turned
up.
He cost us by going against his vow.
He should have married a Frey.
Right.
That's not the only mistake he made, though.
Oh, he made a lot of mistakes.
A lot of mistakes, but
those mistakes end in death. Unlike Eddard, he didn't die with honor. I mean, whatever House Frey did, here's Walder Frey. You just kind of rubbed it in his face. I mean, I'm not agreeing with Walder Frey, but at the same time,
he's not wrong.
Can you really blame him for being pissed off?
No, he's not wrong.
I mean, if
not just that, it's letting him pass, you know, and then you're also, Walder Frey also is a rebel against the crown as well by siding with Robb Stark. He puts his ass on the line, his whole family, and Robb Stark did that by completely ignoring the marriage pact he made with him. And even when you go, all right, well, sure, maybe you can make the case that Walder Frey isn't such a bad guy, but he betrayed Guest Right. Okay, yeah, Guest Right is like the number one rule in Westeros among gods and men. You don't betray Guest Right. But what is a marriage pact? Marriage pact has to be up there in terms of things you don't betray. So considering that they broke a marriage pact, considering that Walder Frey went rebel against the crown to side with you, let you cross, lost thousands of men in your war, can you blame the guy? You can't really. But somehow he's like the most hated guy in all of Westeros. And
right.
I'm not saying he's a good guy. He's definitely not.
No, he's definitely not. I'm definitely siding with him, but I don't blame him.
But you can't blame him.
It's just so funny, and we'll talk about this again when we get up to season three. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the episodes ends with Robb Tully, Robb Stark, and he's like, he's talking with his wife. I still don't understand why they named her Talisa. She's like, do you have enough men? I mean, it might be Catelyn, if Walder Frey. I'm like, you just betrayed him, and now you're just saying, you're once again going to rely on him again to give you his men.
If I can get Walder Frey back, I had enough men, but then I married her. Stupid. That was Catelyn's show, that whole Robb Stark campaign. At least in the show. The books, not as much was it Catelyn's show, because several times Robb tried to get rid of her.
But he brought her back, though. He'd always
Well, because this is his mom. I don't blame him as much in the book. Cause, and keep in mind, he's
not a
15, 16 years old in the book. He's like 20 or whatever in the show. So it's like, he wasn't trying to get rid of his mom. Like, he kept his mom close, part of his inner circle. It was his mom and the Blackfish and, like, Edmure was his inner circle. Whereas in A Song of Ice and Fire, it's not. And he tried to get rid of her a few times and she wouldn't budge. She wouldn't go anywhere. Either way, Catelyn doomed them from the start. So, Game of Thrones Season 1. I just wanted to go down the line with the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, episode by episode. There's actually a lot of 100 ratings in Season 1, which surprises me, because if you give something a perfect rating, it's like saying that nothing can get better.
Right, and that's why I don't like giving perfect ratings.
Right.
Because once you go to that level, then it's like, oh, so that's a 5.2 then, I guess. We're going up we're going to another level.
Right, we got to make it more perfect. So let's do it this way. You rate the episode on a scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, boy.
What you remember of it.
Now, what are we doing, the rating out of 10? Or?
Yeah, dude, just like 1 out of 10.
All right. So now,
stars or Iron Thrones or...
Now, mind you, I have 6 seasons of memory now locked in. I have to do a rewatch.
Yeah.
And season 1 is very difficult to judge, I think. I think there's a lot of very good episodes, and that makes it tough because you want to, you know, as we just said, you don't want to put everything at such a high number.
Right. I was reading some reviews about season one in particular today, some negative reviews saying they're too plotting, too slow, too intricate, too complicated. If you think, like, if you think season one's complicated,
I can't come up with any more. If you can't get any of the names right, or right. Like, only gets larger.
And it's not easy to.
It's not even the books. Up. The books gets 10 times larger, right. But and this right. is just a word down.
All right, episode one, Winter is Coming, on a scale of 1 to 10.
I can use like 7.5 and do stuff like that.
Sure.
Episode one, Winter is Coming. Very good episode.
Yeah, I mean, we went in depth about it last week. It covers everything that it needs to cover.
Right.
For this world. In the right way. Perfect episode. Can't say it's perfect, but it's really good introduction to this world.
And that's why I'm going to give it an 8.
I think that's fair. I think I'm going to go one better. I think I'm going to give it an 8.5. Just because of the responsibility it had on its right. shoulders.
It was an hour-long episode, too. It's yeah. a little longer than
a little bit longer than normal, because yeah.
they had the cold opening.
Yeah, they had the cold opening.
There's only been like four times when they've done the cold opening, yeah. if right. I'm not mistaken. But 8 out of 10 for me.
Okay, and I'll do 8.5. The King's Road. King's Road is...
This episode, I think, you really start getting the sense of just how bad Joffrey is. It sets the tone. If you didn't get it already in Winter is Coming, that the setup of the protagonist and the antagonist right. of the Starks.
Who the bad guys are, right.
You already know now, after Jaime pushing Bran from episode one,
right.
Joffrey's a Lannister, he's not a Baratheon, the Lannisters are the bad guys, and Joffrey yeah. just kind of really sets that in the tone of all the stuff that happens, because at the end of this episode is when Lady dies.
Even if you get an idea that the Lannisters are bad guys during the pilot, it's that last scene that says, like, wow, they're really bad guys. And then you see Joffrey in King's Road.
Yeah, it wasn't just an off thing. This is definitely a family that you're not really going to enjoy.
I think the King's Road kind of expands on the ideas presented in episode one. And it does a good job filling it out. And it does move the narrative forward where they're on the King's Road heading down to mm-hmm. King's Landing. So I'm not going to put it as high as Winter's Coming. Although it's a strong episode, I think I might do a 7.5.
I'm going to go with 7. I'm purposely trying to keep things down, because we talked about this for season 6.
Yeah.
When I think when we did our post review, both of us, I think, realized that we were a little too high. Too high for everyone. So it's a little
too low, rather.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to set it low, because not only we're doing this season, we also have to do next season.
A lot more episodes to come.
Right.
Agreed. So episode 3, Lord Snow.
Obviously, towards Jon. In this episode,
he's practicing with the other Night's Watch right. recruits and just kicking their ass.
Right, he's being moody. He's being Jon Snow, Moody Jon Snow. I'm better than these guys. I'm this. I'm that.
Ned arrives at King's Landing. Small council meeting about how the crown is broke, but they want to throw a tourney. Joffrey and Cersei have that scene where they agree that the Starks are their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Catelyn and Sir Roderick arrive at King's Landing, trying to keep a low profile.
Really, the episode where you're already kind of seeing, like, middle finger. Little finger.
Middle finger, yeah.
I never liked Little Finger. I know he's one of your favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I just like...
I never liked him.
I like how clever the character is. Yeah, like his big plan.
Yeah, he just always... And he still does. He looks like a pedophile to me or something. Yeah. And it's even worse now because he's trying to, like, kiss up the Sansa. I see you and me and the crown.
Ugh. This is the one where Jon Snow's just kicking ass in the yard, and then Benjen tells him that he's riding north of the wall.
I'm ready.
Yeah, Jon's
2 days of the wall, it's like, I'm ready for this. And Benjen's like, you're not ready.
He's like, you ain't anywhere near ready, bro.
Right.
I'll see you when I get back. Viserys attacks Daenerys, and Rhaegar, her bodyguard, stops him from attacking her.
It's a good episode. I'm gonna go 6.5. Just because, again, I'm trying to keep a low scale. I really am.
Nothing wrong with it.
The next episode is one of my favorite episodes of the season.
Okay.
Right, I think what we're trying to do here is we're trying to show that we have to really make a distinguishable factor of the real good episodes.
Yes.
And agreed. That's what I'm trying to focus agreed. On.
All right, no doubt. So Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things. Believe this is where Samwell Tarly,
yes.
soft, fat lordling from the south, arrives.
Tyrion has already gave Jon the speech a little bit. You should be doing a better job with them. You were trained by a master at arms. These guys aren't trained. So you're already starting to see that Jon takes that advice into the next
mm-hmm.
episode with Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things when Samwell Tarly comes. And the show makes right. a very good right. direction of where Rast goes. Rast. So he's just yeah. beating up on yeah. Samwell. And you as a viewer is just like, all right, it's enough. And Jon sees that, you know, it's enough. And of course, Thorne gets on John's case.
And Rast is perhaps maybe the first example of one of those very, very minor characters that is still memorable. You still know good guy, bad guy, and he plays a role in, even if it's like a B or C plot, he plays a role down the line.
Right. This is then where Alistair Thorne already sets his discipline on John, where John and Sam will have to clean the tables because John... This is a very... One of my favorite scenes. This is the second time the show has really given away RLJ. King's Row and John Eddard meet by the promise. This is the second one. When they're cleaning the tables, there is the RL is in, on the, in the wooden beam.
Right.
I know the R the isn't complete, so people, oh, it's not an R. It's an R. It just wasn't really complete. So when John's next to it, it's RLJ.
You've showed me this, and it's true. It is there.
And this is also the time, and which makes it even more believable that it is, because this is the time when John and Samuel are talking about having sex with a girl. Like, yeah, and John's like, I almost did it once, but I didn't want to do it.
It was Samuel, Roz, right? It was referred to Roz.
We have to really mention her, please. Yeah. My God, what a waste. And Sam was like, well, why? You didn't know where to put it? And John's like, I know where to put it. Goes into the whole entire thing. What's my name? Your name is Snow. What's that mean? That you're a bastard from the north.
Yeah, it's actually a really good scene because it shows John as both an adolescent, I know where to put it, you know.
Right.
But also shows the foresight, how wise beyond his years that he is.
Yeah, he didn't want to...
Another bastard.
He didn't want another bastard. Right. What the show did very cleverly in his little speech to Samwell is they pretty much batted off all the three theories of who John's mother was. The wrong theories of who his mother was. I'm just paraphrasing. I could get them all mixed up in the order of they were said, but John was like, I don't know who my mother was. I was, you know, my father didn't tell me about her. Was she a whore? Was she a fisherman's daughter? Or was she a noble woman?
Right.
So you have the whore, like, you know, there was the son of a whore, kind of a wet nurse, her, male Wyla. The fisherman's daughter theory that he lit the fingers.
Right.
And then the noble woman, a Shara Dane.
Right.
They give you all the three false ones. Yeah. He actually just says it right there.
Good writing.
Very good writing.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that episode an 8.5.
Okay. It's also got the hands tourney.
This ends with
Tyrion getting captured,
which sets up the next episode so well. And it's just Catelyn Tully at her best, at her most finest, is causing problems. And
already
she just arrests
Sir Roderick's probably like, "What are you doing?"
Well, Lannister did it, so I'm just gonna arrest any Lannister. Right. You're guilty for being a Lannister.
They're all the same.
He has, like, no idea.
If you try to kill Bran, why would he be anywhere near the North if he was responsible for trying to kill Bran?
Right.
Okay. You do 8.5. I think I'm going to agree with you. I think I'll go 8.5 also. I think I might have gone 7.5 or 8, but I think the way you talked that episode up, that with the cliffhanger, how good of a cliffhanger that was.
Yeah, that was a very good cliffhanger. Because especially, too, I think at the time you're looking at it and you're kind of like, all right, we got these lashes back. He starts to get these lashes back.
Right. Tyrion's the one Lannister that you like from the get-go.
Right. We've already established in episode 3 that him and Jon have...
And we know that Catelyn and Jon don't get along.
Right.
So...
I was thinking about this before, like, yesterday. There's, like, 3 times where Tyrion says something to Jon that has so much foreshadowing. 2 of them were in the show, and 1 of them wasn't in the show yet. There's 3 times when there are meetings that he has foreshadowing lines concerning about Jon. Whoever his mother was, she left none of herself in him. He was a Stark... Irony is, the mother actually left all of him, all of herself in Jon.
Then she was a Stark.
Yeah. He tells Jon, never forget you are a bastard, for the rest of the world will not.
Right.
That's foreshadowing, because the rest of the world won't forget Jon, because what he's going to do at the end, they're going to remember Jon.
Right.
Whether he's a Azor Ahai, he's a king, or wherever he comes, they're going to remember him.
Right.
And then thirdly, he says, you know, they're talking, and you know how Tyrion's kind of jabbing at him, and Jon gets moody, he gets upset, he's like, ooh, bastard boy with nothing to inherit. The irony is, he has everything.
Got everything to inherit. Everything's his.
Yeah, all those foreshadowing lines that have already, from book 1, that you just knew right off the bat that I think George was playing like 3 books, that there was so many foreshadowing lines in that book for a lot of characters.
Well, we've said that a lot of times.
And it just has slowed down, because I decided I have to write in more stuff.
I'm a gardener.
You know.
It's not enough that Danny's learning how to rule. We need to learn about what she's learning to rule. The Wolf and the Lion, episode 5.
Right, and this is the episode, I believe. Now, this is where we first start seeing some, I believe, this is where Arya is in the dungeons chasing the cat and comes across Varys and Illyrio.
Yeah.
And you're already thinking, okay, this guy Illyrio, he's in Essos, and now he's in King's Landing all of a sudden, and they're talking about it's only a matter of time before the wolf and the lion come at each other's throats.
Right. Varys says that the wolf and the lion will be at each other's throats.
Is it Illyrio then that says it, but our friends, like the Dothraki, are they set? I could be wrong on that.
Arya chases a cat as part of her training under Ciro Forel. She stumbles across a massive dragon skull in the bowels of the castle. She hears voices. She ducks and hides. Varys walks by with Magister Illyrio of Pentos. They talk about how close Ned is getting to the truth. We will be at war soon, Varys says. Illyrio worries that Khal Drogo will miss the opportunity to put a Targaryen on the throne. But Littlefinger and Varys cross paths in the throne room and banter. Littlefinger says that he knows Varys was collaborating with, with Magister Illyrio. This is also the episode with the small council meeting where...
Right. Great scene.
Yeah.
Great scene.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Awesome acting between Mark Addy and Sean Bean.
Because Eddard does all this because Daenerys is really Lyanna's daughter. No children. It's so good. That's such a good scene. Yeah. Take it off and go back to the north.
Yeah.
I'll rip your head out with it.
Careful, Ned. Careful.
Because that's when Ned says, well, no different than the Mad King. Kind of, he's accusing Robert now of being just like the Mad King. Right. And like, you know, that's where he says, careful, Ned, now careful.
And I don't know if it's in the show. I think it's just in the books. And I think it might be the fever dream he has in the Black Cells where he's thinking about Robert. And Robert is saying, I was a lousy king. Tell me I was better than the Mad King at least. And Ned's like, you're not that bad. You're not as bad as the Mad King.
It was definitely Buck. That wasn't in that show. That wasn't in the show. I definitely remember something like that.
Some master acting by those two guys. And
the small council, they're trying to, like... And you have Varys there trying to, like, also be on it, too.
Right.
Well, he has other plans.
Well, it's interesting because everybody has their own plans going on. So you go back and watch that scene.
See, now, Varys is the one who's backing Daenerys. So it definitely can be said, if he's writing one of the letters, was he writing any letters out there to get her killed? Or is he just writing letters out there to protect her?
I think to protect her.
Right. Did he send the letter to Jorah later on about the poison? Like, they're going to attempt to poison her.
Well, you don't know what Jorah reads.
Right.
But you got to think that Jorah's under the impression that he's betraying Daenerys to the crown. Because Varys wouldn't let Jorah in on that inner circle. That's just him and Illyrio Mopatis.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to be careful timing on his part to let Jorah know that this is what's going to happen. And to also hire these assassins. Kind of close to a plot hole. Almost. But you got to think Varys is smart enough to handle something like that. But this episode does end with the wolf and the lion at each other's throats as Jaime confronts Ned, Jory, and Littlefinger as they leave the brothel. It ends with Jory's death.
It was so funny about that when I first watched the show, and Littlefinger was like, I'm going to get the city guard. How long does it take to get the city guard down there?
I'm going to go get the city guard. I'm going to go grab a sandwich, and then I'm going to get the city guard. He just wanted to get out of there.
He had
nothing to do with that. He's like, oh shit, I'm out. So wolf and the lion.
And that was all because of Catelyn. What do you mean? You know, I want my brother back.
Ugh. You can trust him. He's like a brother to me.
Oh, God.
Okay, Catelyn.
No, we forgot about the... God, I mean, it's a good... Oh, God. Oh, my God. And
You could trust him. Littlefinger, yeah, you could trust him. Tyrion, yeah, you tried to kill Bran. Jon Snow, his grandkids are going to try and steal Winterfell. I know what I'm talking about, all right? I'm a Tully of Riverrun, damn it.
Yeah.
Family, duty, honor.
Which, by the way, I have new words for House Tully. Hook, line, and sinker. Brings the fish involved, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just like all of them. Just get the hook out there. They'll believe it.
Apart from the blackfish, who's your favorite Tully? Not Edmure?
I hate Edmure.
Oh, man, dude, I love
Edmure. Edmure.
Really?
Watch season 6 again.
Yeah.
Just watch season 6 again. I mean, he's funny, like, in the Red episode when he's getting married. He's like, careful now, ladies. You can get that. There's no Tim in that monster. You know? Yeah. It's kind of like he's so gory.
He's just a doofus. Man.
Yeah, he's
like,
a doofus.
Jamie's, in the books, Jamie's like, your king and your family was being slaughtered downstairs and you were up with your new wife and you didn't notice. He's like, it's busy. How was I supposed to notice?
Careful now, ladies. There is no other Tully outside the Blackfish that I like. And I like the Blackfish. He's like the only one he's the only one in that Tully household, family, that realized how bad they were. Although he said before, not that I liked Hoster Tully, but I imagine Hoster Tully had to be some formidable, you know, leader.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the children, oh my God, Lysa. Now, have we met Lysa yet at this point? We've had to have.
Well, no, we meet her in this episode.
The Wolf and the Lion?
Yeah.
Is it this episode or the Golden Crown? I don't want to jump too far because I forget which episode it is. It's got to be the next episode. We'll go into the next episode. It's got to be. So now, a ranking of The Wolf and the Lion.
I'm going to put it around the King's Road. I'm going to go a little bit lower than the King's Road. I'm going to go a... You know what? I think I'm going to do a 6.5 Wolf and the
Lion. Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to do a 7.5.
Okay. All right.
I mean, it's good. I like it that we're someone that agreeing with the numbers here. We're in the realm, but we're not completely... We're not both saying 8.5. Right. Yes, it's an 8.5. Yeah.
I think that for this, for The Wolf and the Lion, I think there's a scene with Roz and Theon that I don't like.
This is actually one of the instances...
The Wilding Attack, I don't like that the direwolves were not involved.
Well, that's... I mean, everything that they've done with the direwolves throughout the seasons has just been... And it looks like, spoiler, it looks like even next season they're going to follow that same trope.
Yeah.
Of just, you know, less direwolves. And what's something I...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, The Wilding Attack's the next episode.
Golden Crown?
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, yeah. For Wolf and the Lion, it's the... as much as I like that small council meeting, and as much as I do like the fact that Jaime and Ned come to blows... Right.
Which I thought was actually even better than the book.
Yeah. And I like the introduction of young Robert Arryn. What is it that I really... There's something about this episode that I really don't like.
Well, actually, now I was making a little quick point on something. This past season, Game of Thrones, when they've killed off two more direwolves, the fact that we still have Nymeria and Ghost, the fact that they're keeping Ghost alive tells me that something is important with Ghost down the line.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Because if you're refusing to use the direwolves in any kind of CGI, why not just get rid of all of them?
Well, why include them at all in the first place?
Right.
You know?
So they're keeping them alive for something. Yeah. Maybe down the line, Ghost has had meaning, some sort of importance, as has the Nymeria.
Yeah. I think with me, for The Wolf and the Lion, I think it's just 6.5. Like, I think it's good. It's not excellent. It's all right. I think that's kind of like my Mendoza line for a good episode. Not excellent. Definitely not bad. Good. Solid episode. Wolf and the Lion. But a Golden Crown. Golden Crown is...
The death of one of my favorite characters from season one.
This is where we get the Wilding Attack. Cyril Farrell tells Arya about, what do we say to the God of Death? Not today. There's only one God. And he's the God of Death. Dany eats the stallion's heart. This is where we get the trial by combat at the Eyrie. Right,
my favorite scenes.
Robert's hunting with Renly and Ser Barristan, and he tells him about making the Eights.
Yes.
Sansa's being a total bitch to Septa Mordain. Joffrey tells Sansa he'll never be cruel to her again. Ned tells his daughters that he wants to get them out of King's Landing.
Right, right.
And then, of course, we get the Golden Crown scene.
And they're both, for different reasons, arguing to stay there. You know, Sansa, oh my god.
But I love him.
He's going to give me princesses and princes. Right. And it's going to be so loving Dory. And then Arya is upset that, you know, she wants to continue her sword fighting.
And that's what tips Ned off to what's going on with Joffrey, is Sansa saying he's nothing like his father. Dag nabbit, she's right.
Wait a minute. How come I didn't realize that all these kids have blonde hair?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Wait one goddamn minute. I like Golden Crown a lot. Because I think things started to really pick up with Cripples, Bastards, Broken Things and the ending of that episode. Mm-hmm. Things really pick up here because I did not see Viserys' death coming. Well, I mean, I did because I read the book, but you think he's a bigger player than he actually is.
Right.
You've talked before how you really like that character.
I love Viserys. He's crazy.
So that was a big death.
But that's all I wanted.
Yeah. Well, that's all I wanted.
That's
great. All right. Tell him thanks.
Well, appreciate it. Definitely ingenious ways that, you know, that scene, you know.
Mm-hmm. Creative. Yeah. Very creative. And Daenerys then gets bumped up a peg just because, like, she's the only Targaryen left now.
Right.
So you got to wonder what she's going to do. So it's kind of like the whole show with this episode takes a different form. Ned figures out what's going on. So
is that the ending scene in that episode, I believe, is when he's got the book out? And then it just ends like...
Yeah.
Whoa. Brr, 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 wah, wah.
I'm going to give Golden Crown... Dude, I'm going to give Golden Crown an 8.
I'm going to give it a 7.5 again.
Nice. You win or you die. Ep 7. And this is, we get a good explanation of why it's so important for Tywin to make sure Tyrion's free, to the point where he brings civil war to Westeros.
Right.
For a son that he doesn't seem to love all that much.
Before we go on, what episode, it was probably the war, it had to be episode 5, I remember it was episode 5, I'm going to just backtrack real quick, just real quick, where we have Robert and Cersei's discussion of Lyanna.
Oh, yeah. That is...
Why now? Why talk about her now?
Right.
And then she's like, what harm can Lyanna Stark's ghost do to us? I thought about something about a couple weeks ago when I was thinking about that line. The harm is, it's not Lyanna, but it's Jon is the harm to them, because Jon has the height, would be a threat to them. Kind of like subliminal messaging in that line, you know, what harm could that ghost do?
That's a really good scene, which is just written for the show. It is a really cool scene, talking about...
She was the one thing I wanted. Somebody took her away from me.
What episode is that? I think it is 5.
Either that it's Golden Crown, very early in Golden Crown.
No, I think it's Wolf and the Lion, because it would make sense with the title, Wolf and the Lion, also. Because Golden Crown, they... are in Ned's chambers, and he slaps her. So they're not, you know, I mean, that conversation was kind of like they were at peace and laughing together. Mm-hmm. It was really the only moment where you get to see why their marriage worked at all, if ever.
But anyway, you know, that was just something I wanted to bring up. That I like that scene a lot.
That was a very good scene. And one of the first signs that Benioff and Weiss knew what the fuck they were doing with this television show.
So on episode 7, you win or you die. This is the episode where I think you really start seeing, like, the reason why the show loves D&D, love Lena Headey.
Yeah.
She's very good in this episode. Yeah. This is one of her first real... I mean, she's so, like, confident in this episode. She already knows with Robert out, she's got the plan that she's...
Looking back, we know that she's confident, but I think the airing of this episode, you're not so sure. But the thing is, she has... As Cersei, she has such a good poker face that she's not letting you in... Like, Ned knows the truth about it, and he's going to tell Robert. And she's like, what about my anger, Lord Stark?
She does, Lena Headey does a very good eyebrow raise, if you've ever noticed. Yeah. Watch her eye. Yeah. She gives The Rock a taste of the mind right there. Very, you know, she has I can't do it as good. I mean, she has very good facial diction. Is that the word I'm looking for? Like,
you know, facial. She does, but her facial expressions don't change that much, but they still give away a lot. They make this big deal in A Song of Ice and Fire how Lord Tywin never smiles. Cersei never smiles either, you know? She is a lot like her father in that way, but not quite as clever. Robert is mortally wounded during the hunt.
Took me a while to even figure out that was actually done on purpose, getting him drunk. I don't know why it took me so long to figure that out. And I love the Daenerys attempt. I love Jorah. It was so funny. If you look at him, is he the same guy who plays Rast?
It kind of looks like
him. He looks like him.
His uncle or something.
Like, yeah. We got to save money. Yeah. All
right, Rast, put this beard on. You win or you die. So we start off the episode, this meeting in the garden between Ned and Cersei.
You love your
Ned giving away his whole game plan. And at the end, the tables have turned on Ned. Any advantage he thinks he had or thought he had, he didn't have. He never had. He should have never trusted Littlefinger. Should have never trusted Catelyn and telling him to trust Littlefinger.
Right. And he's lying there, too. He had already lied. He had already lied to Jaime. Like, it was my order to arrest him.
Right. Ned thinks that he's got this moral high ground, and because of that...
It's going to trump everything.
Like even Renly offering swords. He's like...
We will not have bloodshed.
Right. Doing it by the book.
I learned this from my father. He did this very successfully against the Mad King. Lord Stark, he died. We're still doing it my way.
We're just dealing with Queen Cersei. It's not that big a deal. Jaime's not.
Yeah, he underestimates Cersei. Mm-hmm.
Do you think he would have acted differently had Jaime been in the city?
Probably.
He would have had to have.
I think he would definitely seen Jaime as more of a physical threat.
Yeah.
With Robert out of the way, he's actually being, you know, in charge of sentencing. We've taught that at thousands of times, the whole entire first setup of Eddard and Tywin going at it, and Eddard sending Barrett the Darian out there against the mountain. So, and we have that scene. I don't know if Eddard thought maybe he had a sense of not power, but maybe more power than he thought he had. Maybe he thought he had more love from the city than.
But I would just, say I would say more power, not love from the city, but yeah.
But wait, what's funny is the lashes are so bad. We see this throughout not just season one. We see in season two. We see, you know, we see constantly. We know as a viewer, and things look so obvious. The lashes are just running the city to the ground,
right.
And they don't care. But yet somehow they just love them
because you're talking
about the city, the people.
Yeah,
I mean, they kind of turn later on when the High Sparrow gets involved a little bit, but yeah. Like, and we've seen it in the scene.
Oh, the riots in season two. The riots. Yeah. Leading up to this point in time, they love the marriage of Robert and Cersei. They love that marriage.
Right.
And
I wanted to say real quick, that it's like the play that we see in season six.
Okay.
They love the Lannister side. People seem to love the Lannister. They love, I don't know if it's Robert and Cersei. They just love that, they love their king.
Well, it's the narrative that the Lannisters are able to shape, right? So it's Ned was doing the right thing, but they're able to take advantage of the situation and present to the people the narrative that Ned tried to kill Robert and take the throne for himself, and he betrayed Joffrey, but we got the advantage.
Painted in their favor,
right? They make the story, and it goes back to our friend Tom Zarek. He who wins gets to write history,
right?
Or whatever the fuck it is.
His old enemies die, so they just keep on writing it as if, he betrayed us, he wanted to kill the king, he did this,
And then in season two, obviously they find out that that's not necessarily the case, that Joffrey's not the greatest kid in the world.
Right.
But, yeah, we'll get there. But you win or you die, this is the end of the second act. I'm going to give it another 8. Matter of fact, I'm going to go 8.5 for you win or you die.
8.5, wow.
8.5, yeah. I love that throne room scene. I love that throne room scene.
I'm going to give it a 7.75. I'm
going
to go...
Oh, he's going quarter points. All right.
I'm going a quarter point here.
All right.
Now, the next market will be a 7.875.
7.895.
Niner.
Yeah.
Is there a niner in there?
The Pointy End, episode 8, written by your friend and mine, George R.R. Martin. So this begins with shit hitting the fan and just chaos as the Lannisters are killing all the Stark men.
Mm-hmm.
Arya is able to escape because of Cyril Pharrell, who fights off some Lannister guards and a knight of the Kingsguard with a wooden sword. Varys visits Ned in the dungeon, tells him that Tyrion's escaped the Vale. This is where those rangers beyond the wall come back as wights.
Is it this episode where Jar gets Longclaw?
That'll be the next episode.
The next episode.
This is the episode where Jon had an altercation with Alistair Thorne, but then he saves...
Right, he saves the Lord Commander.
Who's walking around, for some reason, walking around butt naked.
He was taking a bath.
There's like a fire raging in his part of it.
He's taking a bath. It was 1 o'clock in the morning, he's taking a bath.
What's going on?
The Ghost and the books is more involved, and obviously they didn't put him involved in the show.
Tyrion and Bronn meet up with the wildings from the Mountains of the Vale. Rob calls his bannerman. Great John challenges him, and he loses a finger. Sansa begs Joffrey to be merciful to her father. Your father must confess and say, I'm the king, or there will be no mercy for him. Not a whole lot happens in this episode, but it is a very well-written episode, because obviously George Martin knows these characters very well. I have to say, the highlight of the episode would be the stuff with Arya and Cyril Pharrell, for me.
I like calling the banners.
Yeah, calling banners, yeah.
Nice. I love that scene. Yep,
that's a very good scene, too. But not a whole lot of action. It is probably one of my favorite episodes of season one. But I'm not going to put it up there with Winter's Coming or You Win or You Die as my high scores. I think I'm going to go 7.5 for the pointy end.
I'm going to go 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Give that a nice strong 8. I really like that
scene. No, I do too. I do really like it.
It sets up like the white, you know, like the fact that the White War, you can have, the people can come back.
Right.
It sets up that threat that, you know, they're not just dead. That what that scene does with... Ortho or Orgo, whatever his name is, when Ortho, he comes, yeah. Ortho, when he comes Ortho back, powers. It's a driving force constantly. You always have to hear, we have to burn the bodies. We got to burn the bodies because we don't want this one coming back.
Creepy. Episode 9, Baelor. Varys visits Ned again and basically says, I know you don't want to betray your honor, but what if I told you if you don't, your daughters will die? So Ned decides to betray his honor. Catelyn makes a marriage pact with Walder Frey in order for Robb and his army to cross the Twins. John gets Longclaw. He has that chat with Maester Aemon where we get the reveal that he is...
It's a setup here with the... What's cool, he gets Longclaw and he's so happy. And then Samwell's sitting down there. He's like, what happened? I shouldn't tell you, but Your brother's gone off to war. And then we get that scene with Maester Aemon, which...
Really good scene.
Oh, my God. The line he just says is... I was thinking about this last night. We have that line that Maester Aemon says. What is honor when you have a newborn son in your hand or a brother's smile? Paraphrasing. And it kind of makes you think, is Maester Aemon trying to tell Johnny he knows something more? Because I don't think Maester Aemon knows. I don't think he knows. I think... What it does do, it means so many things. It could mean he's talking about his brother, Aegon. Mm-hmm. You know, his brother, Smile. But it's almost kind of like George's way of letting us also maybe something happen with Ned and Lyanna. You know, a newborn son in your arms, a newborn, you know, a brother's smile.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of like a plot armor. And I was thinking about it, it's almost like we call it GMPA. George Martin plot armor. Because he's writing it in a way that it could mean multiple things. And you could also mean that later on, Maester Aemon says to John, what would your father do if he had to choose between honor on one hand and those he loved on the other? And John said he'll do whatever is right.
Yes.
Could go back to what he does with Lyanna, chooses the side of the one he loved. But then it could also be in the present, somewhat future, when Ned betrays his own honor to try to save his children. Also, at the same time, he'll do the ones he loved. He'll always go to the side of the people that he loves. And John says he will do what is right. Wherever Eddard feels is the right thing to do, that's the motive.
Right.
If I feel it's the right way to do it, I'm going to do it. That's how Eddard is. He's not going to do anything otherwise.
He may do one or the other, but he's going to do what's right. I don't know what that is.
And those lines are just so it makes you question, does Maester Aemon know about John?
He definitely
does. I don't think he knows. Nah. In a way, it's a bit of a plot armor again, also because we know that Rhaegar and Maester were in conversation. Obviously, there was a war going on during a part of this, but don't you think Rhaegar would then ride off to Maester Aemon, Uncle Aemon? I think I really figured out this prophecy. I got this northern girl. Red
or I really fucked up.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Listen, things are happening. You would think he would say something, but he doesn't. We don't know for sure, but it's almost like a slight plot armor.
Yeah.
Why Rhaegar wouldn't mention anything to Aemon about Lyanna and possibly having a child with her. Would that be the prince that was promised? Because Aemon thinks that the prince that was promised is actually Daenerys later on. He has
no idea, I think,
if Aemon knew about Jon and Lyanna, I think he would probably think fire and blood and ice.
I think he would put it together. He would. I don't know if Game of Thrones Aemon is presented in that way, but Song of Ice and Fire Aemon, most definitely. He's very knowledgeable on Lightbringer, and he knows that Stannis' sword is fake.
Right, right.
And I think in Jon, what he sees is a natural leader, and he sees the potential of John, and that's why he has these conversations with him.
It's so convenient that Maester Aemon is blind, someone who is so knowledgeable that he can't see John's eyes. Because maybe he would see something in his eyes that way. Looks like my nephew's eyes. Typical George R. R. Martin again. I'm going to have a Targaryen next to near John, but he's going to be blind, so he can't.
Removed from
he
can't see for years.
Right, he can't see anything physically with John that could kind of like give him a hint that maybe John is related.
Also in Baylor, Khal Drogo falls from the saddle. A Khal who cannot ride is no Khal.
I like them. I like that scene better in the books.
We get the Whispering Wood, right?
It is.
It's at the end, though. It's at the end of the
episode. It's before he dies, because he still says, one battle does not make us conquerors. We still have to free my sisters. We still have to free
one
my father.
One victory does not make us conquerors. This war is far from over. Right.
We still have to get my father, so obviously Eddard's still alive. So that is that episode. There's so much going on in this episode. This episode is really
There is. It's a very good episode, but I think it's that holy shit moment that most people remember.
You forget the little things. There's a lot of good little things in here. Yeah. A lot of stuff happens.
Yeah. That said, I'm going to go with an 8.
Well, I got to raise the mark here for the first 9 of the the first 9.
All right.
I actually would love to put it at 9.5, but I just can't.
No, it's too much.
Because
too much coming
in. Yeah, there's too much.
Although you are doing quarter increments now.
I could be doing 9.25. But I'll call it a 9.
Okay. Fair enough.
It sounds like a front-running episode, but like if you're going to choose one episode of this season, which episode are you going to watch? You're going to watch Baylor.
Well, actually, you know what? I might argue with you for a different episode for a different reason, but I understand what you're saying. It is like the episode 9 where everything happens. Fire and Blood, episode 10, which is more of a summation setup for next season episode. Arya watches Ned get beheaded. Catelyn and Robb are sad. Tywin sends Tyrion to act as hand in his place and bring that boy to heel, and his mother too, if need be. Just don't bring the whore with you to court. So, of course, Tyrion brings the whore with him to court. Daenerys, Miri Mazdur, Jorah Mormont, Khal Drogo fiasco.
Definitely something that I just never realized, and inadvertently and definitely not directly, Jorah Mormont is responsible for killing Rhaego. I just never caught it, and I just... He didn't know.
Right.
He was not there at the time where Mizor, wherever, I always butcher her name anyway, who cares, wherever her name is, tells her, you have to leave. You can't be in here. You know? He obviously doesn't know that, but he's just like thinking, oh, we have a midwife. Oh, we have this witch. Let me just bring her in there.
She's trying to bring Khal Drogo back to life, but this is obviously more important. Let me just barge in.
And he's actually responsible for the death of Rhaego, if you really think about it, in a roundabout way.
He definitely is. And it doesn't seem like he ever takes notice of it.
And neither does Daenerys, right? Yeah. It's never brought up. And again, that's GMPA. That's kind of a big thing, you would think. Forget about you trying to inform on me, but you're also responsible for killing my son.
Right.
Here's something about this, and I was thinking about the visions, and we hear a little bit briefly in the show, a little bit talked about how he was going to be the stallion that mount the world. He's going to burn cities to the ground. Tyrion warns about this kind of stuff, too. Would Rhaego have been a villain? If he lived, he's going to burn cities to the ground. That means you're killing people. And you're not just killing soldiers, not just a war. You're destroying cities.
Yeah.
Would Rhaego have been a villain if he had lived? So was his death maybe a blessing?
It's a good question. Burning cities to the ground. I mean, cities represent, especially in Westeros and Essos, they represent culture. They represent protection for the small folk.
Right.
Stability.
The Night King would have been doing it. He's going to be destroying people. Would Rhaego have done the same thing?
That's an interesting comparison, too. Rhaego and the Night King.
It's fire really, and ice.
Really, yeah, really.
That's why every song needs a balance.
Yeah.
It's not all... One can't just win. It's got to be...
That's worth more discussion. It's definitely worth more discussion. Interesting stuff. Fire and Blood. Here we get the dragon scene at the end. John runs off, and then his friends convince him to not.
Right. Hunter brought you back. My favorite scenes there with Jorah Mormont, and this is where you're finally really seeing John really taking that father-son connection almost with Jorah Mormont.
Right.
Tomorrow I wish to go out north of the wall. I will not stand back here idly while all this stuff is happening. I mean to look for these rangers. We'll find Benjen Stark, and we'll find out what is going on north of the wall. So what I need to know from you... Are you going to be a brother of the Night's Watch? I want you and your wolf with me. The music plays, and then you see John line up, you know.
Yeah, it's an exciting setup for the next season. You know, hear about all the stuff that's beyond the wall.
You think your brother's duty is more important than yours? When dead things and more come hunting us in the night, do you think it matters who sits the Iron Throne?
And that sticks with John for the remainder of the series. Right, even now, as he's declared king.
I need you to fight in this war.
That's great.
This war is coming.
That's great. I appreciate that you're making me king. I'll use this new power to help fight the real enemy.
John, no matter what, always thinks about the people. We have to get the wildlings. Where I'm not going to punish people for their
because they were born on the other side of the wall.
I'm not going to punish houses because they were against me. I got to get those people because we all have to fight.
And that's interesting too because Tyrion mentions we're all puppets on our parents' strings. Our parents are pulling the strings from beyond the grave.
Mm-hmm.
They set up how our lives are going to be and what we're going to do. And John's saying, I'm not going to punish people because they're on those strings. If anything, we'll cut those strings because we have a common enemy
mm-hmm.
that threatens everything. And it doesn't matter about this house, that house, who sits on the Iron Throne. That's a good, I don't want to say monologue by G.R. Mormont because it's more of a conversation, but it's a good...
It sets up a theme. Right,
and
it resonates with John. Mm-hmm. It, you know, what is more important?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more important to play the crown game or our lives?
Right. Like, let's say you help your brother and he becomes the king of Westeros. There's still this threat, and you've seen it.
And it's also, too, we will also get that hint, though, too, with the wildling Osha, when she tells Bran, you know, when Rob goes to war, he's going the wrong way. He's got to come up north. North is the real battle. Right.
Like, everything you're talking about down south, like, it sounds like bullshit.
Yeah.
I've seen what's up north. Worry about that.
Yeah.
Don't worry about these assholes down south. like Theon and Tyrion. Don't worry about that.
And still right now, outside of obviously the North, the only two main characters we know that know what's going to happen is Bran and Jon. Bran, because I think he knows, because he can see visions of it, probably.
Right.
But Jon definitely knows. He's seen his failures already.
Yeah.
He knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, right. The others, sure.
I'm curious in the next season, like, what does Sansa think about all this?
That is an interesting question.
I mean, she has to know that Jon was resurrected, but the show hasn't touched on that, how she thinks about that.
You would think that she'd be curious about it.
Right, like why would you come back? There was no conversation.
Unless he didn't tell her about it.
Yeah. But I'm sure she had to know. I mean, she has to know.
She would have heard rumors.
Well, she has to know because she has to know. This is why she has to know. Because she has to know the rules. She knows that Jon was the Lord Commander. And when she meets Jon in season 6, he's about to leave. She's going to have to ask him, why are you leaving?
Yeah.
He had to have said, well, they killed me.
I thought this oath was for life.
Yeah, well, they killed me. That's why it's not for life, because I came back. But it wasn't put in the show. It's kind of like D&D plot armor right there. It just wasn't shown.
I never even thought of that. That's something that needs to be explained.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping maybe like early on next season.
You know what? I've learned that you can trust these guys to come back and explain something they need to explain or return something that...
You know, I think you just said, I think it needs to be... There's got to be at least some sort of conversation about it. Not even explained, but just
reference to that it was explained at some point in time. Right. She's come to an understanding of it. Fire and Blood. I'm going to do an 8. I'm going to do another 8.
I'm going to agree with them. I'm going to say 8.
I was almost going to go do like
ending 7, on a great
7.75, but
it ended on it ended very good with Daenerys the dragons being born.
It got you real psyched for season 2.
Right.
So my high marks were Winter's Coming at 8.5, Cripples, Bastards, Broken Things 8.5, and You Win or You Die 8.5.
Yeah, mine was Cripples 8.5 for Cripples, Bastards, Broken Things, and 9 for Baylor. And then a couple eights thrown in there.
Just some solid eights.
Weakest one, I guess, was Lord Snow.
Mm-hmm. All right, not bad.
Not bad. Quick comment. You know, it's amazing how slow the Army of the Dead walks.
Yeah.
I think by now they would be at the wall. Right. And they're still not there.
Right. Well, they take a lot of breaks. They're gardeners. They're not architects. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break there, and we'll be back with some more Season 1 of Game of Thrones coverage. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum